Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you ready to take your business to the next level? Every day there are countless books and articles that are published offering the key on how to make your business a success. It's easy to feel overwhelmed trying to keep up and run your business. That's why Deb Creer created the Business Power Hour. Keep up on the latest trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. Let the Business Power Hour do the heavy work for you.
Good morning, good morning. I am Deb Creer, and I am passionate about giving professionals the tools that they need to make themselves and their businesses as successful as possible. And we're going to have so much fun today. I'm talking with one of my new friends that I met online networking. Who goes to real networking events anymore? And so we're going to have so much fun today because we're going to be talking about how it is critical, absolutely critical, that you be unique and that you treasure the fact that you are unique and you stand out in your uniqueness. So please join me in welcoming Nikki Green to our program today. Welcome, Nikki.
Thanks, Deb. So happy to have you. Happy New Year, everyone, or happy whatever season it is when you listen to this.
I know. That's the thing about evergreen content. It's like, whatever, it happens to be kind of cold here in Atlanta. It's really, 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 really cold where you are. But for those listening, when it's 80 degrees, God bless you. Well, let me tell people a little bit about you and then we will dive into this. So Nikki Green left the tech world to inspire the next generation to do things differently. She partners with graduating college students to create a syllabus for life designed to help them pursue their passions rather than just a paycheck. Through her book, I Laugh in the Face of Danger, and her weekly podcast, Stand Up and Stand Out, she coaches what she calls the chameleon mindset, teaching her audience how to adapt to their ever-changing environment. So again, Nikki, welcome.
Thanks, Deb. That was perfect. You nailed it.
Cool. I love it. It's almost like I know what I'm doing, right? So I always love to ask my guests how they got to where they are today. So tell us how, because you've had a heck of a journey. I loved reading your book because you go through all of that. And it was so funny because I was thinking, that's kind of me. But you've had much more adventures than I have. So please tell us a little bit more about yourself.
Yeah. Spoiler alerts for the book. No, just kidding.
You'll have to get the book and read it. We're not going to give everything out.
Yeah, no, it was a really great journey, I think, for me to write the book and to just share a little bit about that. And that's been the wonderful thing is that so many people have told me it's relatable stories, maybe not the exact thing that happened to them, but the type of experience. And, mm-hmm. and that's really what I want to talk people through and help them get more comfortable sharing mm-hmm. their experiences as well, because those are the experiences that make us unique. Mm-hmm. Those are the experiences that shape us right. and help us feel like we're involved in the world. Mm-hmm. So it's been fun. So I grew up, I had six parents. That's kind of
six. Six. And I'm reading that thinking, oh my gosh, Mother's Day and Father's Day is expensive for you.
It really is. It really is. And anytime I've ever had to explain it, I usually need like some sort of utensils and like,
it was confusing. I was like,
yeah, next time I'll put a diagram.
That's it. A Venn diagram. You're the little point where they overlap.
But it was great because that part of my childhood really allowed me to have so many different experiences because my parents were all very different, had very different lives, had different jobs, different careers. They lived in different places. Mm-hmm. And so through that, one, I learned to adapt. There was no one way for me to do things. Right. I had lots of different ways to do things. And it gave me a lot of new experiences. I got to travel. Now in my life, I've been to 14 different countries. I've been to 32 of the US states. So I don't really stop moving, including on my website where I'm dancing.
I know. It's here next to me. And at some point, I'm just going to start bebopping with it.
Mm-hmm. And so when I finished school, I did what everybody else does. I went off to go work in some, you know, very important firms with big names. And I thought that was going to be it. And I wasn't really happy. And I had some pretty bad experiences, especially as a woman trying to compete at the workforce, right, even now.
In a man's environment in a lot of cases.
Absolutely. You know, my early jobs were working in financial planning firms, you know, being around investment planners and financial planners and people that do stock investing. I was the only woman in there. And I'm a little different. I, you know, usually have kind of purple hair or, you know, some other kind of unique thing going on. And that's just who I am. And that just didn't quite fit. And then I moved. I was living in California at the time. So I went to Silicon Valley. I was like, oh yeah, for sure.
All this these is tech going to people. Woohoo. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. They're going to fit me better. Mm-hmm. And in some cases they did, in some cases they didn't, because they still had a lot of that old mentality about what work is and, you know, what it meant to be a manager and what it meant to move up. Mm-hmm. And, you know, oh, the things you can do as an analyst, like have purple hair, mm-hmm, those are okay. But when you're a manager, you won't be able to do
right.
that.
No. Must be back to the button down collars and the suits, right?
Right. And I was like, no, I'm not going to do that. That's not who I am. And as a director, as I continued to move up the chain, I just said, no, we're going to be who we're going to be and really continue to push that authenticity, mm-hmm, no matter what the circumstances mm-hmm were. So
I love it. You know, and your book talks about all of this. And it was fascinating. It's not a long book. Show us the book. You know, for those who are watching on the video.
Look,
yes. Yay.
Very short.
It's again, it's I laugh in the face of danger and other life lessons that should have taught me better. But you know, it really was one of those where I'm sure anybody reading it at some point, they're going to go, oh yeah, I've had that happen to me. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not six parents, but non-traditional families. Absolutely. I think, you know, that's, you know, having the one mom and dad is really pretty unique anymore. Now we also have, you know, mom and mom and dad and, you know, they and them, and, you know, and it just gets very confusing.
And but aunts and uncles, yeah, and adoption. Oh,
yeah.
And
yeah, you know, and it really is, I think, showing though how we're embracing the uniqueness of of what is out there.
Yeah. And how to actually work together. Obviously, you know, there were challenges in each of their relationships and how they came together and then broke apart, mm-hmm, and had to come back together because we had kids. Mm-hmm. And so that was a good lesson for me as I eventually, you know, got married and, you know, had my own struggles in my relationship of how do you deal with these things? How do you deal with these complexities? And really continue to make a family out of wherever it is that you are and whoever is around you. How important community is to raise your kids and how to even just be yourself, right? Mm-hmm. And to be comfortable in your own skin.
So. Right. You know, and it's in some ways it's better now because there's the big world and we can see, you know, okay, there are other people like me out there or in the same circumstance. But in other ways, I mean, you know, there are so many things. I always think of social media, you know, and how it's in many ways a great tool and in other ways horrible and awful. You know, you talk in your book about bullying and, you know, and now we have people bullying who are thousands of miles away and, you know, doing all sorts of things. And so that's just very scary.
Yeah. And I think about it, you know, I say, oh man, I would hate to be a young person in this age with social media. The bullying I experienced was some pretty extreme racism when I was just barely, you know, 10, 11 years old. And it affected me. It affected me for the rest of my life. And those concepts, at least I was able to run home to the mm-hmm. safety of my home mm-hmm. where those bullies weren't there. Mm-hmm. Those bullies were isolated to a place, school,
right.
which mm-hmm. I loved and began not liking mm-hmm. anymore. But at least I had that separation. Mm-hmm. Now with social media, right. you lose that barrier. Mm-hmm. And I'm getting concerned. And part of why I want to continue to have, you know, that influence on people to speak out mm-hmm. is bullying doesn't just happen at school. If right. we don't stop that mentality, whether it's online, whether mm-hmm. it's in school, whether it's in other places, mm-hmm. it continues. And that's what I talk about is as I got into the corporate world, mm-hmm. there was all sorts of new types of bullying.
Right.
It was misogyny. It was, mm-hmm. you know, against my gender. It was mm-hmm. against all sorts of things mm-hmm. that they perceived as who I was. Mm-hmm. And even when I went for help to HR and other places, they didn't help.
Right.
And that wasn't just one company. That was multiple companies mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. that we aren't equipped to actually deal with these problems because we still have that same fear mm-hmm. as when we were a little kid.
Right.
And so I really hope to, you know, encourage people to help bring this back to a way we can build community mm-hmm. and stop breaking each other down, whether it's online or, you know, in person through mm-hmm. our jobs.
Right. You know, and let's talk about bullying in the workplace because it does happen. I mean, it happens all the time. And, you know, and it's not, I mean, there's obviously so many different levels of it. One of the things that struck me when I was reading your book was how women bully other women. Mm-hmm. And that happened to me several times. I mean, you know, and it's funny because you don't think of it in many cases of, as bullying at the time. And then afterwards you think, well, that was a crappy thing for them to do. You know, and it did, as it did in your case, it was jobs I loved, mm-hmm. but the people made me hate the job.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate. And when I talk about people following their passion and not just a paycheck, mm-hmm. it is a lot about that concept. Mm-hmm. The thing I learned over all the different evolutions of my career, the people made the difference.
Right.
Maybe it was a manager, maybe it was a peer. There's lots of dynamics there of people that you're interacting with. But if you're not around good people, mm-hmm. you're probably not going to enjoy the work.
Right.
And many times, you know, people are saying, oh, well, you know, it's men bullying women all the time, especially because men have power over you mm-hmm. in most cases. But now more and more women are coming into power. But as they've come into power, they've been in this male-driven world mm-hmm. where that's the same mentality they've learned.
Right.
And they have this scarcity mindset. There's only one spot for a woman, so it's going right. to be me. Mm-hmm. And we start competing against each other instead of actually acting like a community again and bringing each other up. So.
Right. You know, and it is kind of a catch-22 system. You know, there are, you know, we're told, you know, when we're four, and somebody starts picking on you, get over it, live with it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, ignore it, you know, or, you know, they don't mean it. I mean, all those various things. And then, of course, it does carry over into the workplace. And to some degree, there is that. I mean, you know, it is, okay, ignore it, all of those things. But it's different for each person. When they reach mm-hmm. that point where it's like, no, uh-uh. You know, I'm not doing this anymore. And like you said, HR or managers or whoever, they're never quite sure how to do it, especially when it's a person in power, because, mm-hmm. you know, you don't want to get the boss in trouble.
Yeah. And you have to find that balance, right? Mm-hmm. When I was younger, I was definitely more sensitive. And so it was a very difficult transition as these things started happening to me because school was my favorite. I wanted to go to school. I loved it. I loved learning. I loved being there. And I loved making friends and being around people. All of a sudden, to not be liked for something that had nothing to do that anything other than my skin tone, I was very confused
right.
mm-hmm. and not getting the help I needed. And mm-hmm. so gradually as I got older, I started becoming an advocate for others mm-hmm. when I saw that bullying in the workplace. Mm-hmm. So even when it wasn't me, I was making sure that I stand up for others. And that's the transformation that we need to have mm-hmm. because sometimes people don't have their own voice mm-hmm. and everyone has their own lines. I can take a lot now because mm-hmm. I've had to endure this. Right. And sometimes you get a little bit thicker skin and, mm-hmm. and maybe that's a good thing. But at some point, you do need to balance and we do need to be kind to each other again. You spend a lot of time at work, like a lot mm-hmm. of time at mm-hmm. work. And so if you're going into a toxic situation, you know, you would never do that in another circumstance. Would you stay in an abusive relationship? Would you, you know, be abusive to your children? No. So why do we allow something that's so integral to our lives, paying for our bills and going into that job every day, do the same thing to us? It's really difficult for you mentally. It can be physically stressful. So that manifestation continues if we don't all start working together to make it better. So,
yeah. And of course, the tricky thing about it is, there's the very obvious bullying, you know, and everybody recognizes that. It's the subtle things that just kind of pick away at you. You know, you walk in and we're back in an office, right? We're actually in an office. And you walk in to say the break room, and everybody stops their conversations and looks at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or luckily I haven't really had to deal with this in quite a long time, but being called the girl mm-hmm. will get it for you.
Right.
And, you know, and there is, you know, what I hate about some of this is we excuse that behavior. That's what they learned. That's, you know, I'm like, my father, bless him, you know, he passed away many years ago, but he used words to describe people that now we cannot use. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even 20 years ago, he shouldn't have been using those words, but that was what he was used to. And so people excused that. And, you know, same thing in the work environment. Well, that's, you know, that's just Bill. That's just Sue. That's just how they're a jokester, right? Mm-hmm. That's one of the big things. Well, they're just joking with you. Right. So how, you know, aside from just saying, I quit, I'm not going to do this, how do you deal with those situations?
Yeah, it's funny. So the very first episode of my podcast, we talked about bad bosses and the spectrum of different bosses that you can have and how best to deal with them. Some of the bosses are that they're more passive and passive aggressive often mm-hmm. because they don't know how to stand up for themselves,
right. Let
alone stand up for you.
Mm-hmm.
In those cases, I was always advocating you need a peer manager or a peer at the very least, mm-hmm. right, to help you in those circumstances. Mm-hmm. Some of them are outwardly aggressive, and that part is a little easier because you can stand up. The other person sees, you know, that you're not happy with the confrontation, mm-hmm. and most of the time they'll back down.
Mm-hmm.
But then there are those sinister ones. We call them the evil genius, where and those ones are so much more difficult because it's covert. Mm-hmm. It's behind the scenes. It's something that, you know, maybe not everybody is seeing because they're very pointed at how they're doing that delivery. And those are usually the most toxic. And those are the most difficult to deal with because everyone else is like, ah, no, he is the jokester. Oh, he's a nice guy. Mm-hmm. He seems fine to me.
Uh-huh.
And they,
yeah, it's never bothered me.
Exactly. And then they turn it around and start to gaslight you as well. Now Nikki must be the problem,
right?
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah. Because you're the only one that's bothered. Therefore you must be the problem.
Exactly. And so that's how they get that whole situation turned around. And so again, it's making sure you have a community and a network of people that you mm-hmm. can talk to, that you can work with, because the first answer isn't, okay, quit and let me walk out. It's despite the great resignation and everybody walked out in the last year, but we've all got bills to pay. We're mm-hmm. all trying to, you know, provide for ourselves mm-hmm. and hopefully, you know, travel when we get out of this pandemic.
There's a plane.
Mm-hmm. And some of that is that building up your thicker skin and starting to work through those challenges and figuring out how to deal with different kinds of people. And sometimes there's just strength in numbers. So the more you have together with you that sees that behavior, that can also help you work through how mm-hmm. to interact with people. I had a manager who loved yelling at me, yelling at the top of his lungs. And
mm-hmm.
he thought the louder he was, the better his argument was. Mm-hmm. So I started taking the reverse. I would just talk softer mm-hmm. and softer. And so it was really obvious how different that voice tone was. Mm-hmm. And then it seemed like he was absolutely all out screaming at me, which made him actually calm down mm-hmm. and actually start to talk to me in a more normal tone of voice. And other people are like, oh my gosh, how did you do that? You know, because mm-hmm. he's constantly yelling at everybody in the office. Mm-hmm. And I said, you just got to take a different approach, because the more you yell, the more they yell. And then everyone's just screaming, right?
I mean, no, think of kids, you know, yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So there's a lot of different techniques, and each different type of boss, you know, really takes a different one that you have to look at. And now with remote work, it's even more difficult to read people because maybe you get video. A lot of people are still, you know, like, man, I'm in my PJs. I'm not turning on the video.
Yeah.
So you have to start building deeper connections with people, and you have to make that extra effort because you're not going to have that cafe conversation where you just happen to run into each other while you're grabbing coffee. So,
right. You know, and the subtle ones really are still the things. And I used to teach a class at Metro State in Denver. And one of the things that we taught people was, you know, to recognize some of those subtle things, things like, you know, when you shake hands, they kind of twist a bit and put their hand on top of yours. So they're, you know, and, or, you know, you come into their office, you sit down and they're perched on the edge of the chair. So you're looking up at them, you know, and like and sometimes people just, you know, they're just, you know, I know you're a petite person. and I'm, you know, I'm only 5'5", so I'm not that tall either. But I used to hang out with a lot of very tall people, athletes, and, you know, and they never even realized that they were intimidating because a lot of times they're around people their own size. And so then when they're around us little short people, they're like, whatever. And so I learned to take a couple steps back, and, you know, and it just kind of balanced gives things out a little bit more, you know, and, or you ask them, hey, let's sit, because then you're more eye level, you know, some things like that. And yeah, so whether somebody's intending to kind of lord it over you or not, these things happen.
Absolutely. And the height thing for me has always been, you know, I'm 5'3". I'm not, you know, midget size. I'm definitely normal, but I usually wore heels in the office. Right. And, you know, a lot of times you're in a conference room where you're sitting, and I'm a pretty boisterous person. I'm very extroverted. I'm always giggling, laughing. And, you know, even when we're talking through serious stuff. So I have a big personality, and all the people working for me were over like 6 feet tall. And so whenever we'd walk down the hallway, we'd look kind of ridiculous, like a foot apart. But that's where everyone said, well, you just seem bigger. You seem, you know, bigger than your size. And they don't realize until they get close to you, you know, actually the difference in that dynamic. But I think that is a great one too, is make sure you kind of give yourself some distance so you can see, or get back to sitting.
You know, and it is, you know, it's one of those skills, and you work with kids just coming out of college that they need to learn, you know, they need to, and of course it's very difficult if you're an introvert. But that's, it's also very easy for people to take advantage of an introvert, whether intentional or not, because if they say, you know, the introvert doesn't stand up for themselves in many cases. So that's kind of one of those things you have to learn, is how to stand up for yourself in an appropriate way. You know, standing up and yelling and screaming, no, maybe not so much, but saying, hey, you know, wait a minute, that was my idea. You know, is, and that is, it's difficult for introverts. And I think online it's getting even worse. You know, it is very easy to turn your camera off. Now, granted, maybe you're turning your camera off because you're eating or whatever, but maybe you're just not comfortable. And so you turn your camera off. You know, I'm seeing more and more meetings where they are saying you have to have your camera on. You know, and it's like, okay, guess I won't eat, or I'm going to eat and they're just going to see me eat. But, you know, that does help keep people engaged.
Well, I think it's important. And I do talk a little bit about this. I mean, living in the world of tech, we were 24/7 all around the globe, right? So at any given time, we always had this dynamic of dealing with video. And I said, no, yes, it's midnight and I'm taking a call and I'm in my pajamas, you know, and maybe I'm having a glass of wine. But these are the things, is you have to have a better way of communicating, and you have to really see the impact you're having on people's lives. And by turning off your camera, you take that away, right? You take it away that, hey, your kid's screaming in the background, your cat's walking across the screen. Maybe you have a very small apartment and you don't have any personal space. These are all the things that are social cues for the other person on the other end. When you're an introvert, you may not have to say anything. The camera says so much, and you got a lot of those social cues when you were in person. And so when I would go to meetings, you know, like a scrum meeting with a bunch of engineers, a lot of them were quite introverted, but super smart. And I knew they had the right answers. So I would help pause the meeting. I would help give them an opportunity to talk. And when that, you know, one or two sort of loud other person might want to talk over them, I would pause them. Mm-hmm. No, you know, so-and-so is trying mm-hmm. to finish their thought. Let's see what else they have mm-hmm. to say, and really give them the opportunity to, you know, share a little bit more in a timeline that works for them. Not everybody talks as fast as I do. So I really try to help people, you know, through those conversations and to make sure that introverts get their equal time. And video can help them do that as well. I know, you know, you don't want to turn on the cameras, but you don't realize how important that extra mm-hmm. bit of body communication and right. just social cues are mm-hmm. going to be for the other person on yeah. the line. So,
yeah. you know, and that's where it is so important as the leader. And now it's important to note that person might not be in charge, you know, but the leader is who is going to recognize, you know what, Nikki hasn't talked in a while. You know, I'm not going to, you know, and sometimes it is putting, you know, saying, hey, Nikki, what do you think? Putting mm-hmm. you on the spot. And then you go, yeah. but, you know, that leader is going to recognize, okay, you know, what's going on here? And maybe, you know, it's that they don't call them out at all, but mm-hmm. afterwards, they contact them and they say, you know what? I want to hear what you were talking about. You know, it's yeah. always interesting when you get called out, especially, you know, and for some reason it seems worse on camera than in person. you know, I was on one the other day and I was just happily sitting there and, you know, and I'm like you, I mean, you and I both have the very out there personalities, and there are times where I really have to bite my tongue to, you know, let, you know, and I'm, you know, because I know I'm like that, I'm very, hopefully very conscious of trying to make sure that, you know, I'm not talking over people and all of that. But I mean, this is one of those meetings where it was a great meeting. I was just having a good time listening. Yeah. I mean, it was, and listening to the conversations, all that. And they called me out and they said, you haven't said anything. What do you think? And I'm thinking,
in the headlights.
I know it had to look like that, because my first thought was, oh crap. Because I wasn't quite paying attention to, I mean, you know, right. And so then I'm thinking, what am I going to say now? So, you know, that is kind of one of those things that you have to watch is, you know, you don't want the deer in headlights look, because I kind of laughed. And in that little, you know, pause, it gave me a chance to collect my thoughts and say what I wanted to say. But yeah, it's the leader is who is going to make sure that everyone is heard to the degree that they want to be heard.
Yeah. Well, and this is a lesson, you know, I always taught my managers and the people that work for me is never wait for someone to work for you to work with you. Mm-hmm. That you don't need the title of a manager mm-hmm. to be a leader in your group. Mm-hmm. Step forward, stand right. out. If you have good ideas, mm-hmm. if you need collaboration with someone else, just reach out to them. Mm-hmm. You know, everyone's talking about doing side hustles and all these other things on the side of your job, but it's amazing how many things even at your own job that you could probably make better just by creating your own side project there. Mm-hmm. And in the tech world, a lot of times they'd let you go branch off for part of your job and go do that permanently mm-hmm. and make a
That's
small
That's how
department.
They got some of the great innovations.
Exactly. Is just by thinking outside of, okay, well, this is my boss and I have to have permission to do these things. Now, not every company is like that. And so sometimes they're more strict lines, but in general, you can collaborate with anybody. If there was something I didn't know, I went and found somebody in another department that understood it better. Right. And I got some information from them and then went on my way. And mm-hmm. then funny as it would happen, a lot of those people ended up working for me later.
Yeah. Like, oh, this
we
is
had
fun.
Such a mm-hmm. good time working mm-hmm. together. And so that's how you really build your network up mm-hmm. is you have to step out of that comfort zone. Mm-hmm. And as an introvert, there's still plenty of ways to do that without having to be the bubbly, like coffee shop mm-hmm. person. You can still do it focused on work. You can do it mostly over email. Mm-hmm. You can still have a conversation mm-hmm. just on the phone.
I know those things still exist. You don't have to be on camera.
Exactly. Slack is an amazing tool mm-hmm. and some of those others where you can chit chat together and have mm-hmm. a group of people working on a project and you never have to get on video again.
I know. Yeah. I mean, you know, there are times I'm like, oh, I have to put on a good shirt today. You know, and when I really have to, when I have to go out and put on pants and shoes, I'm like, nah.
I know.
But yeah, it's interesting. You know, and I love that you work with these graduating seniors. Because this is all practical stuff that they're mm-hmm. not taught. You know, and I mean, yeah, you can teach some of it because we teach communication skills, all of those various things. But, you know, tell us more about how you work with these college seniors, because I think we have a lot of parents who, or aunts or uncles or whoever, who listen to this program and watch it and are thinking, you know, hey, I've got this kid that's getting ready to graduate. Now what?
Right. And for me, you know, this was such a critical time of my career where I was following the I should path. Mm-hmm. I should go do this. I got a degree, you know, mm-hmm. and now this is the next step. And then I got into that job and I was like, oh my God, this is awful. I don't mm-hmm. want to be here. I liked the people, but mm-hmm. the job itself wasn't rewarding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I kept sort of stumbling into whatever the next thing was going to be. And so having that network of people that can help you shape what that idea of your future looks like. Mm-hmm. I call it the syllabus for life because you right. go to school and you get a syllabus and it tells you, here's your class schedule. Mm-hmm. Here's, you know, the weeks that we're going to have class. Here's the weeks you're going to have an exam. You get into life. It doesn't work that way.
No, what? There's no roadmap. There's no syllabus.
There is absolutely no roadmap. And so that's where you get really challenged because it's like, okay, well, what do I do? I don't even understand. I go look at a job description. What does that even mean? Mm-hmm. I don't understand. And it, of course, half these job descriptions are written terribly. There's a bunch of internal jargon that nobody understands.
And then it always says, and other duties as assigned. And you're like, exactly. Oh, no.
And now everything's digital, right? So it's like, mm-hmm. oh, let me submit my resume along with 100,000 other people to these jobs. Mm-hmm. And most of the jobs that exist today probably won't exist soon. And right. probably about mm-hmm. 50% of the jobs that are going to be here in 5 years mm-hmm. don't exist now. Mm-hmm. So building your career now is going to be very, very different. And you mm-hmm. have to evolve and you have to really rely on these unique skills. Mm-hmm. And so this is why it's going to be even more critical for students to begin building this ability to network and especially network virtually. Mm-hmm. You don't know where you're going to end up. You don't know where you might want to move to. You don't know how the economy is going to go. We hopefully will end this pandemic someday soon. Ah. Right? All these layers are happening. And pretty soon, maybe people will only have jobs that are like freelancing or, mm-hmm. you know, in this gig economy where I don't report to one boss. I don't mm-hmm. go to one company. Maybe I report to multiple different companies. Maybe I have my own. And building that takes much, much different skill than showing up in class, taking the exam after I read the mm-hmm. book, and then walking out the door mm-hmm. afterwards. It's very, very different. So,
right. You know, and it also applies to kids who didn't go to college or didn't go to a traditional college. You know, at some point they get thrust out of that nest at home, you know, and they're having to figure out where they're going in life.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, even just coming from high school, right? That's also a difficult transition because now there is a little bit of controversy because people are saying, oh, why should I go to university? I can take a few online courses. I can learn the basics. I can go to school through Google now. You know, there's a lot of ways to get mm-hmm. certificate programs, which will give you a lot of those mm-hmm. basics. Originally, university was, you know, a more well-rounded program. And right. of course, you do a little bit of English and you mm-hmm. do a little bit of math mm-hmm. and, you know, you have all these things, but that doesn't necessarily get you a job, right?
I mean, my undergrad degree is in social sciences.
Exactly.
Yeah. What it meant was I didn't have to take a lot of math.
Really?
That was it.
Uh-huh. And I think everything's going to evolve. I think mm-hmm. what's going to be important is we go out, we work a bit, and we figure out what we want to do or travel. Mm-hmm. The best thing that ever happened to me was going to France for the summer. Mm-hmm. I saved up, I, you know, went and I learned not just like the language and, you know, went to school. I learned about the culture. I learned what it meant to be in a foreign country. What it meant to be by myself, mm-hmm. you know, and to get myself.
And you were
around.
18.
I was 18. Yeah. I was a bit of a baby, but
your
you know,
six parents were just like, what the heck?
Yeah. And so then, okay, you learn a bit and you start to get now onto the next path. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to learn a bit more about whatever the next thing is. And then you go back to school for maybe a year or two, or maybe you can do it online in parallel and then go back to work. I really think this is going to be our new evolution mm-hmm. where we're pairing learning and working in a more dynamic way mm-hmm. because economy, technology, so many things are changing so rapidly. Mm-hmm. There's no way you can go sit there for 4 years and learn what you need right. to know for the next 40. Mm-hmm. It's just not going to be possible.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, and like we said, there's a lot of things that are not taught in college. I mean, it's just like there are, you know, kids and, you know, granted, there are people who don't know how to balance a bank account.
They don't know some of the basics, for good or bad, and I grew up in the era way back, when we had home ec and we learned to cook and sew horribly. I don't know how I ever got out of those classes. And then you had shop class mm-hmm. even back now, I went to school in the late 70s. I'm that old. But even then we had guys who took home ec and girls who took shop. Now I went mm-hmm. to a very small school. And I remember the guys took home ec because they went, ooh, food. Right. And then they didn't realize I gotta sew. But then and it was funny because some of them got really good at it. And same thing with the girls. They're like, I don't want to be Susie Homemaker. I want to mm-hmm. learn shop and things like that. And so it was interesting that, way back then my school allowed that. But we also took things like business law and, all of those various things. And so when you were out on your own, you kind of knew things, but now they don't. I mean, I talked to somebody the other day who doesn't even have a checking account. I'm like, how do you pay bills? they kind of looked at me like, they really couldn't explain it. That was the scary thing. But because you do have to some degree have a bank account. Now maybe you don't balance it. A lot of people ever look and go, hey, look, I still have money. That's what they count as balancing it. Right?
Close enough. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Financial acumen is one of the things we're going to try to hit on the next mm-hmm. season of my podcast, because it has come up quite a bit.
Right.
And it's even beyond that. Right. Mm-hmm. So I was very fortunate. My parents were very financially savvy and they taught me a lot about money. Mm-hmm. My stepdad bought our first house selling collectibles, comic books, coins, mm-hmm. and all these things. So it wasn't that we made a lot of money. He was mm-hmm. smart about how he was mm-hmm. investing in things that he was interested in, things mm-hmm. that he knew about. And one of my first jobs, I worked at a bank. I was a teller there. Obviously I got a degree in finance and mm-hmm. I learned very quickly when I was doing financial planning about saving for retirement, even mm-hmm. at the age of 22. Right. So mm-hmm. I thought about these things in advance and I realized many kids are not getting that type of education now. And there's a big transition happening. So when I was coming into the workforce, we were moving away from pensions and going into 401ks.
Right.
So that started a shift in the workforce because mm-hmm. you didn't have to stay with a company for 20, 30 years to get that pension and be comfortable for retirement. Mm-hmm. You could have a portable 401k mm-hmm. and move that around as you did. That next layer needs to happen with insurance mm-hmm. because health insurance is the other thing that's really creating a huge financial burden.
And that's got to be portable.
Oh, and
affordable. Not only portable, exactly. but you got to be able to afford it. Mm-hmm.
And as a young person, if you're doing freelancing, and you're sort of having your own business without having a business, mm-hmm. you look at that hourly wage and go, man, this is great. I'm making $20, $30, $50 an hour, maybe something, really amazing, or even doing influencing, mm-hmm. on social media. All that's taxable. And so there's going to be a payback that has to happen. Right. And if you haven't along the way been taking care of your own IRA, right? Mm-hmm. Or, something equivalent.
Well, health insurance, like we were saying.
Health insurance, life insurance, stuff happens. Mm-hmm. Look at the pandemic. Mm-hmm. You never know what could happen just completely mm-hmm. by accident. And you need to be able to provide for yourself mm-hmm. more than the 5 minutes in front of you. And mm-hmm. so we're going to talk about some of those layers of things. I know people are getting all excited about crypto and some of those things, and we will hit on that a little bit. But
us old people don't understand that. And more importantly, we don't take it. I mean, you can't pay me in cryptocurrency.
Exactly. And so understanding the differences between all the different financial vehicles, mm-hmm. why you need those different levels mm-hmm. of security to manage your day-to-day finances, to manage your health for the mm-hmm. long term, and to manage your financial security for the mm-hmm. long term as well. Right. So,
And you touched on this in your book. One of the other financial things is negotiating salaries. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the most complicated and difficult things to do, especially when you're starting out, you have no idea unless in the job description, it said the salary range is 30,000 to 50,000. And then you go, okay, I'm going to tell them 40, mm-hmm. Or I'm brand new. So I'm going to tell them 30. I mean, but we, when I always hated that question.
So what is your expected salary? And I would tell them negotiable. And of course, that doesn't work if you're applying online. Right. You know, it doesn't like those little words. And, you know, and so, you know, it is, it's, and I think especially as women, we do undervalue ourselves. You know, and whether it's a salary or an hourly rate, you know, maybe you're a consultant, you know, whatever, you know, it's hard to figure out that value, because a lot of it also pertains to exactly what you were saying. There's other things as opposed to just that salary, you know, and so, you know, and that is kind of the whole negotiable part. It's like, okay, well, I mean, I remember the last in-person in company job I had, one of the things that I told somebody one time when I was interviewing, I said, you know, I have very good insurance through my husband, so I don't need it through you. So I want a bump in my salary.
Right.
And, you know, and I think a lot of people don't even understand. And some of them who've been in jobs for years don't understand. You can almost always negotiate.
Absolutely.
You know, you can say, okay, I don't want this, but give me 2 extra days off. Or, you know, it used to be, now it's, you know, but we would negotiate work at home. You know, I want to work home every third Friday. Well, now it's, I want to come into the office a day a week.
Please, can I come into
please,
the office?
Please, can I come in? You know, and it's always worth negotiating. And I think especially as someone who is 21, 22 years old, being interviewed by somebody my age, you don't want to say it's negotiable, because you're thinking, I'm going to think, whoa.
If it's negotiable, really? I'm going to go low. Mm-hmm. And that's really difficult. And I'm really glad right now there is actually a huge push for transparency in pay, because it's gotten even more confusing with the remote working. Mm-hmm. And I experienced this a lot because I moved frequently when I had jobs. Mm-hmm. And so I had to experience that cost of living differential to really understand what it meant to make one salary in one location and to make that same salary someplace else.
Right.
And then as a manager, when I brought people in and, you know, they're negotiating salary from, let's say, Austin, Texas to move to Silicon Valley. Now, Texas isn't the cheapest place, but it's definitely not Silicon Valley.
Right.
And so when you think it's a lot of money, it may not be. And so part of this discussion about transparency on pay is also about, what are you paying me for? Are you paying me for the way I live or for the work that I'm doing? And so that's where the differential of what is this job worth? What are my skills worth is going to be quite different from, you know, some of that differential we used to do about, okay, well, California is way more expensive than, you know, maybe the surrounding states. But I always tell people, ask and talk about it. Right. This should no longer be a thing that we're afraid to discuss, because the more we're transparent with each other and honest, no one's trying to steal your money. Your friends are not there to like get bum free drinks off you, maybe. But if we're not openly talking about it and understanding, you know, then we keep letting it happen. I have friends who are teachers and they're like, oh, we're always going to be underpaid. You're always going to be underpaid as long as you allow yourself to be underpaid.
You assume you're going to be underpaid.
Exactly. Until we start putting the value on the things that are important and the ways that we should be spending our money, then it's not going to come together. And so I always say it's very important for you to have an open dialogue about those things with your friends, with your immediate family, right, that are in similar career paths. So you know what that range work looks like. Also, where are you going to live?
Right. And that's a biggie now. You know, the whole work remotely, I'm so glad I don't have to hire people, because, you know, it used to be that you had, you know, your little form from HR that said, you will pay this person X. Well, you know, if they're in, say, Chicago, it costs a heck of a lot more than if they're in, say, Oklahoma.
Yes.
So does that mean you pay people two very different salaries?
Right.
You know, that works until they talk to each other. You know,
and
the Oklahoma person goes, you're getting paid how much?
Right. Well, even I talk about the difference between state tax and no state tax, right? So I lived in two states, Nevada and Florida, that don't have state tax. They have tax in other ways. Nevada obviously has casinos.
Right. There's still taxes. They need their taxes. Money.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, where other states have, you know, no tax when you buy things, right? So every state is different and those are important things, but should your employer be paying to cover those aspects? If you decide to live and you have a range, in Oklahoma versus Chicago, do I pay you because Chicago taxes are higher or the general cost of living is? And those conversations I think are important, you know, especially in the remote work world is here's my expectations. I live here. I want to work here. You know, I come into the office as many times a week and, you know, here's what I'm worth from a salary perspective because I have the following skill sets, right?
Right. So, yeah. We are, I think, as you said, we're going to start paying more and more based on that skill set.
Right.
You know, and so, yeah, the person who is doing a heck of a job in Oklahoma will be compensated for that as opposed to, well, you work in Oklahoma, so I'm going to pay you less.
Exactly. And I think it's good because this will also expand to the global economy, right? So for many years, there was a lot of backlash because maybe we moved things, you know, what was at the time called offshore, right? So we moved them into places where the income, you know, requirements were lower. Well, if we say that job is worth this much money, then, you know, the increase can go there as well. And that can also help local economies, you know, if this is the dispersion model that they want for where workers are, then it's everyone's responsibility. If I want to go work in Bali versus being here in freezing Chicago, the taxes, international taxes, and all those requirements are my responsibility based on the income that I have. And I need to figure that stuff out, not my employer. So it's a shift of responsibility that's going to come with these things, just like what happened with 401ks and pensions.
Right.
It'll be insurance and then it'll be pay and some of the other levels that, you know, contribute to that whole equation.
And it is complicated. I'm, you know, I had an employment lawyer on last year when, and we were talking about the fact that she said, oh my gosh, it is so complicated now because of various state laws. You know, some state laws require that, that, you know, if you're an employer and they're in that state, you have to pay XYZ for them. You know, and, you know, and, you know, how much are you withholding on state tax? I mean, it's just, ugh. you know, and, but I mean, it's, it'll get figured out just because it's happening more and more. And
it'll evolve. It's going to have to evolve. And now there's a lot of push, even in big corporations to have micro jobs or partial jobs, or, you know, especially with so many people having to leave because they need to take care of children, you know, because they're in or out of school, depending on what's going on in their state.
Today they're in, tomorrow they're out. Okay.
Would you rather lose an employee or keep them 20 to 30 hours a week? Right. And give them that flexibility. But then a lot of the things were like, oh, well, you only get benefits if you work this much. Well, those negotiation things aren't going to work, right? So we need to really rethink. And it's almost like a, you know, a la carte menu of how we put things together now in a job package and figure out how, you know, to totally compensate people for the work that they're doing and the skills they're bringing to the table.
So. And I think remote working really brought that up where, you know, we were used to the 8-hour work day. And you went in and you were conceivably working for 8 hours. And you're home and wow, you don't have all those distractions and this and that. And oh, I can get my job done in 6 hours. So then do I screw around and make it look like I'm working for 2 more hours? You know, and of course the micromanaging managers, this is just, you know, they've all died.
They're having a heart attack.
You know, and because I mean, those are the people who literally put the programs on the on your computer that counted keystrokes and you know, and so you've got your 2-year-old sitting there whacking away on the computer. I mean, you know, things like that. But yeah, it's cause and not only rethink that, but rethink, okay, well, you know, you're a night owl. And so, you know, you're gonna work best from say 8 until 2 in the morning.
Right.
Now, as long as you make that 10 a.m. meeting, I don't care. You know, and so it really is gonna come down to the people saying, what do we need to do so that you get the work done?
Right.
Period.
Yeah. And I think this, you know, for me, it wasn't new with the pandemic. It wasn't new for my employees because we were generally remote. I mean, I was based originally in San Jose. I had teams in Austin, Omaha, Chicago, Singapore, London, pretty much all over the globe. So we were always adapting to where someone else was and trying to make the best of, well, how do we get all of us globally on a single call?
Yeah. What is the time frame where somebody's not asleep?
It's always inconvenient, right? And so this is where we learn very quickly to adapt. And now the rest of the globe is trying to catch up and figure out how that works for other businesses. And it's going to mean managers have to really change. And I think that is going to continue to push a lot of managers out. They just won't want to do it. That's not what they grew up. That's not what they learned. That's not the career that they thought they would have. The power in the office is so important to them that they feel so lost in this new world. and they're really struggling with it. Whereas the younger generation and new employees, they're used to tech. They're used to all these things. They're like, ah, okay, cool. No problem. Like I can do my homework remote. I can do my work remote.
And especially those that are now growing up who, you know, in a couple of years will have been remote learning for so long that remote working is just a natural transition.
Exactly. It's not going to be any different for them. And, you know, this generation is so much bigger than the generations before it. In my generation, Gen X and baby boomers, we're going to be outnumbered very quickly. And most of us have done a pretty good job of saving for retirement. And we have other things we want to do with our lives. Travel, hopefully, as the world opens right
back up. It'll open up again.
And I think the younger generation is going to be put into leadership positions sooner than we ever expected. But they're highly educated. You know, those that have had the opportunity to either do an amazing trade school or go to university, they're already on that next level and they're ready to take that responsibility. And so that's where I really want to help that generation continue to step into that before we're in crisis mode and, you know, a bunch of people are retiring and all of a sudden the knowledge base is gone and they're in a bit of a free fall. Yet again, not just from university to work, but now work into management.
Right. You know, and you're right, there is that knowledge base. And that's, I think, the thing that so many people forget is, you know, us older people know a lot of stuff. You know, and it sure, it's great to hire the new employees, but you need that combination. You know, you need that, you know, the archive of knowledge that goes with it, whether it's a brand new startup company. You know, the oldest, us oldies still know, okay, well, you know, we there are things you have to do in business, you know, I mean, some basics. And, you know, and so it does have to be a combination.
Yeah. And that's one important part of the program I'm developing for this year is a mentor-mentee relationship. Mm-hmm. And so with my amazing network of incredible people that I've met throughout my career and now in this wonderful last year of starting my new business and bringing them together to mentor those younger people, because they're simply not getting it with a lot of the managers they have, or they are trying to start their own business in some shape or fashion, and they don't know where to start. And so by pairing those people up with them, giving them that leg up already and allowing them like, hey, here's a great resource for you as a part of this mentorship program where no matter where you work, whatever's going on, I have somebody who can help you with those things. And we help connect you and keep that network alive.
Right. You know, and it goes both ways. Us old people learn from the youngsters too, you know, because they're going to talk to us about crypto. They're going to talk to us about, you know, remote working. I mean, all these things that we didn't think we were going to have to know. Well, hello, we have to know them.
Well, and that's been the best part. As I started my new business, I wanted to really make sure that my mission met my business. Mm-hmm. Everyone who works for me is either in university or just finishing school. Mm-hmm. So they are all in the thick of that transition. Mm-hmm. And I give them free rein to manage the different aspects of my business that they're responsible for. I'm here for mentorship. I give them other connections as they need it to help whatever next part of their career is. But I want to make sure that I'm giving them free opportunity to succeed and to fail, because a lot of times
we learn from that.
That's the best way we learn from.
Yep. Well, oh my gosh, this is a great segue. So tell us more about what is the Green Chameleon Collective and why Green Chameleon?
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of times we've thought of chameleons as trying to hide and, you know, shy away from their predators. But there's actually a recent study that said chameleons change color to attract what they want. Okay. And so what I really want to be teaching the next generation is how to attract what they want in a very quick fashion. Mm-hmm. A lot of times we've been taught to be zebras, to just stand out and just be yourself and be what we keep calling authentic. Yes. But what I want people to be is unique. Lean back on those experiences, lean back on that life that you've had so far and the life you're going to live, and make sure that you're attracting those things that you want, the types of jobs, the types of experience, the type of other life experiences, family, you know, relationships. Those are all important. And instead of being a passenger and just trying to make sure that, okay, well, if they see me, then maybe it'll happen, to actually bring those things to life. And the collective part is being a community. It's one thing that I had to learn the hard way when I was younger is I thought if I just go to school and I work really hard, I'm going to get the great job. And then if I go to work and if I just work really hard, I'm going to get that promotion. That's not how the dominoes come together. Right. It really has to be a very different approach where you're connected, where you're comfortable with people, introvert, extrovert, it doesn't matter. How you work well with others is what matters. And that when people have a problem and they know you can solve it, they call you. And that's what I want to try to teach and bring people together to attract talent from each other and stay connected in the network. So
I love it. You know, and I think as we've been saying, the more we adjust to this remote world, the more we're going to see that happen. You know, and it's hard because we, you know, I told somebody the other day, I said, you know, I love the social aspects. I miss being with people. But I really love not having to put my shoes on too, you know, and so, you know, it's going to be that balancing act of, you know, doing those social things and, you know, staying safe, whatever, you know, and all of those things, but also, you know, how do we work remotely and individually and all of those things?
Yeah. And I kind of joke that we're a bit feral right now, like we all went inside and we forgot.
Wow.
How to go back out in the world. And it creates anxiety. I know the first few in-person events I went to, I had anxiety despite being the extroverted person.
I told somebody, it's too people-y. It's too people-y.
So we have to be kind with ourselves as we begin this, you know, re-entry into the world again and figure out what the new world is going to look like. I know many people are like, oh, I just want to work remote 100%, but I don't think that that's healthy for anyone. I think we all need a balance of being together, especially as you start your career, because you do need that social aspect to learn, and you'll learn so much more quickly when you can just talk to the person next to you rather than have to try to make an appointment to get online with them, you know, and talk that way. So I encourage people to get out there again, safely as they can, wherever they're at. And definitely reach out to me. I'm always happy to connect people with whoever they may need.
Cool. Well, tell us more about what you do and then how people do connect with you.
Yeah. So first and foremost, I'm a motivational speaker. I love going to universities, alumni associations, anywhere where students are in this transition to really help talk them through, you know, how to take these next steps. And then of course, I'm an author. I'm writing a second book. So that one will hopefully be out this year. But if you didn't catch it, I Laugh in the Face of Danger is available on Amazon. And this year I'm going to be getting some online coaching. I have an online course. And so until we can get back in person again, we'll be doing some summits, some conferences. We'll be bringing in even other motivational speakers and other experts in different areas, depending on the type of things that people want to learn from us as we go through. So super excited to be launching that this year.
And how do they find you?
On my website at www.thenikkigreen.com.
And you have to read Nikki's book just to find out about her name. I love that story. I just thought that was so great.
Exactly. Yeah. And people that have known me for 20 years read that book and said they felt like they didn't even know anything about me. So it reveals a lot that has been kept secret for a long time. So
but yeah, you were not born Nikki Green.
No.
It's interesting. And it's funny. I've known a couple other people who have gone through the name change transition, and it's very interesting.
Yeah. And a lot of people talk to me about that too, of whether people have, you know, more cultural names or something that has some significance with their family, and how difficult it is when sometimes they come into a culture and now they're told to normalize it, or, oh, I can't say your name. So, you know, I'm going to make it whatever I feel like is comfortable for me. And your name is you, and it's up to you to be able to stand up and say it proudly and make sure people know why it means so much to you.
Right. Yeah. And we do change. I mean, you know, people who call me Debbie have known me for 50 years.
Yeah.
People who call me Deborah don't know me at all.
Yeah.
You know, and I always find that funny. I mean, you know, that's, I know if somebody calls me Deborah, it's like, you know, but yeah, it's I'm Deb. That's just, you know, that's what I go by. But yeah, so if somebody calls me Debbie, now, of course, the funny thing is I've been married for almost 30 years. If somebody calls me Mrs. Creer, I look around for my deceased mother-in-law. Right. I'm like, you know, that just never happens. Right.
So very cool.
Well, oh my gosh, Nikki, this has been absolutely fantastic. And we definitely have to have you on again because this is great information. And so, like you said, you're doing another book, so that'll be perfect timing. But until then, do you have any final thoughts for everyone?
Gosh, guys, it's been a difficult 2 years. I know that everyone has been struggling through this transition. And I just want to say, take a pause. It's okay. I'm all about goal setting and all about going after those big things. But the most important thing is our mental health and making sure you're staying true to yourself. So if there's any way I can help you with that, let me know.
Great. I love it. And it's www.nikki green chameleon. Hello. NikkiGreen.com. Well, I am Deb Greer. I've been having just a delightful conversation with the Nikki Green. And until next time, everyone have a great day.
Tune in for our next program for even more trends, best practices, and techniques for how to make your business a success. The Business Power Hour, hosted by Deb Creer, is proud to be part of the C-Suite Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.